Well, good morning, everybody. Let me turn on all the microphones here. And I am here with two guys that are my favorite guys, not in the whole world, but certainly the regulars. Mm-hmm. Kurt from Kurt's Automotive and Eric, his right hand, his left hand. Is there anything else? Are you part of any part of his brain?
I end up being the brain now.
Oh, you are the brain now. Yeah. Okay, okay.
It's nice not having to think anymore.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. I think the kids are doing a good job.
Yeah,
for me too.
Me too.
So, Kurt and Eric are here. I'm Mark Salem, and the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we're gonna take calls, and you can call anytime you want, and Gil's going to answer the phone, and he's going to say, what's your name? You want to talk to Mark? And you said yes, and then he says in my headphone, so-and-so is on the phone, and I write it down, and we get to you just as quickly as we can. But there's a shop around the corner from Kurt's. Kurt's is at I-17 in Bell, and just up the road, Action Autos, is I-17 in Deer Valley. And I understand you don't like him. He's a no-good son of a gun.
No, he's gone all the time. He thinks vacations are...
Oh.
he's my hero. I'm trying to be like him.
Obviously, see... People need to understand that we're talking because we know him.
Yeah.
And there's no animosity. The fact that he's a mile or two away from you, there's no animosity.
No.
The good shop owners like their competition.
Yeah.
And then I think what's kind of neat about that is somebody said something about, oh, so-and-so said that you're a jerk. And I said, well, let's get him on the phone. And, boy, they don't want no part of that. it could have been a week ago, you know. Anyway, Action Auto Repair's up at I-17 in Bell. I've known Tom since 1983 when he was selling engine analyzers. Mm-hmm. And I bought an engine analyzer from him that cost more than my first house.
I don't doubt that. Was it a Bear?
It was a Bear,
yeah.
And it was $32,000, and our first house was $30,000. And Renee goes, you're going to buy this piece of equipment? And I said, well, people say, put it on the scope. Remember that? Put it on the scope. The scope's going to tell you how to fix
everything.
My gun.
Yeah. Yes.
Those pieces of equipment didn't tell you what was wrong. But they gave you the information for you to figure out what's wrong.
And they also looked impressive when the customer looked at it and seen all the lines and it was cool.
Oh, gosh, all the screens and the buttons and everything like that. You could make that thing dance. You could push two buttons, walk away, come back, and get them the complete electrical systems check.
Yeah.
And then it was red if it was bad and blue if it was good, stuff like that. Anyway, Tom's a good guy up at Action Auto Repair. Okay, you ready for my Mark Salem test of the day?
All right.
Okay, a gentleman calls. He says, I called a couple weeks ago. I have a 2006 Pacifica front-wheel drive, and it would the car would kick to the right at 30 to 40 miles an hour, and the steering wheel would change from 12 o'clock to 10 o'clock, and it's got a transverse engine on it, and so what's the matter with it?
Well, speed sensors, steering rack, pressure sensors.
Okay.
Torque load sensors. There's a lot of things.
Okay, I want you to forget the check engine light. I just want you to go with this symptoms. It turned out that it would stay in the offset. So he's going down the road, and it would kick right. The steering wheel would kick right all of a sudden, and then it would stay there, and he would struggle to get it back. So anyway, here's the deal. He spent a lot of time on this. So here's his answer. The passenger side engine mount and the front engine mount were both seriously failed.
Okay.
But that's a pretty obvious symptom. When you got an engine mount that's failed, you've got a terrible vibration throughout the whole car.
Right.
The whole car shakes.
It does.
Okay. So, but then he goes, in conjunction with the bushings on the passenger side lower control arm being heavily damaged. Okay. One and one equals two,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's easy. Well, and then he goes on to say there was some lower arm joint moving under load. It's got 140,000 miles. It runs great, so I fixed it myself. A couple of tools, 2 hours of YouTube video watching, an hour and a half of cursing compressed into 3 days, and she's running great. But one of the things that he put in here was a lower ball joint. I'm trying to figure that out where it was. There was a lower ball joint that had a problem. That's what was sticking, I bet,
as he
turned left and right, is that lower ball. So let me ask you a question. Knowing what you know now, the symptoms on the Pacific, are you ready? Uh-huh. It's got a bad vibration. Sometimes the steering will stick to the right or the left, and it's tough to get it back to center. And the car seems to wander on its own. How long would you take a good technician to diagnose this once he put it on the rack?
5 minutes.
Okay. And I figured you guys for sure would say 20.
I was going to say 20, just to give it a little room.
Us old guys, that's a five-minute deal. You're going to leave the key in the neutral.
Yeah, we were better technicians than they were.
You're going to grab the front wheels, you're going to go left and right, and you're done.
You jack it up, put a bar underneath that one tire, and watch the ball joint move a half inch, and you say something's wrong.
But what he did good was is he enumerated the symptoms.
Yes,
we don't get that very often.
No,
but I turn right and I have to muscle it back straight, and then all of a sudden it hops right, and the right front tire seems to go right, and I have to muscle it back. All that stuff when you come in and say this is what we get, and I think you do too. The wife says, my husband said something's wrong with the front end.
Yeah.
And wait a minute, can we have more than that? Just go drive it. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But he really did a good job figuring it out himself. But in reality, my point is the diagnostic charge on that would have been between $35 and $50 at just about any shop I know.
You said once they put it on the rack, so part of that is getting it racked and double-checking all that stuff.
No, you're right. And if he was in front of you and gave you those symptoms, you could probably go drive it around the block once and verify the problem.
Yeah.
And so when you put it on the rack, then that's the show and tell. Yeah. Come on over here. Let me show you what's going on with this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was impressive that he did it.
Yeah.
But my point is this is, on a 1 to 10 scale, this diagnosis was a what?
A 1 or 2. I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was fairly easy.
I'm thinking 1, 2, or 3 across the board.
Yeah.
This is not anything. And now the quick lube guys who just change oil would struggle.
Yeah, they would.
They could verify that the symptom was there, but they couldn't tell you what was causing the problem.
Or they'd have stopped with seeing the loose ball joint and not caught the bushings that were bad as well.
Yes. So you have the symptoms and they match the repair and you're home free. So it was just an interesting thing. His name was, doggone it, his name was Arthur. His name was Arthur, and I was really appreciative that he actually sent me all of this. It would kick right between 30 and 40 miles an hour, and stay that way with the steering wheel offset about from 12 o'clock to 10 o'clock. That all matches that ball joint issue. So anyway, that's the fun of it. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Right now, last week I ranted for 4 hours on a two-hour show about a repair.
Oh.
The customer went to a shop and said, I have a check engine light, and I have feels like an engine miss. $920 later, they had flushed the injectors twice. They had replaced the battery, which is insignificant to the issue, and he left with the same problems. Then the next day, they sent him an engine estimate for $17,500.
For a miss. Wow, I usually start before an engine on that.
Well, I want to tell you something. My underwear was wadded up something fierce. I mean to tell you, this is the worst. And it happens to be one of the shops that was recently purchased, as lots of other shops were purchased. Yeah. And their labor rate went to 175. But I'm going to tell everybody in the world, mine's 175 now. So their labor rate went to 175. But it's altogether a different thing now.
Was it a common vehicle?
With respect to what we're talking about?
Yeah, very common. Engine miss.
Very
so
common.
It should have been
Chevy pickup truck with a 5.53 DOD.
I'm still flabbergasted at 17,000.
Yeah. Okay. The DOD, we already know that we've got problems.
Yeah, got problems. Usually that's a cam and lifters, not a whole engine.
Okay. Well, here's the problem. It ended up at my shop, and he didn't say nothing to me or anybody else. So it came here. We fixed it for $930. He spent $920 for a diagnostic for $165 and never did it. They flushed the injectors twice, never nothing. This was just let's try that, let's try this, let's try that. And then they send him an engine estimate. It's true that it had 149,000 miles on it, but part of the repair bill was a module to eliminate the DOD, the displacement on demand.
Yeah.
And so once that was gone, it ran great. Then it needed some spark plugs. And when we took the spark plugs out, the boot on one of them was all eaten up real bad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was nothing.
Yeah. Eric done one of them yesterday in a Yukon.
Do you remember how much it was?
About $900.
Yeah. But they charged $900. It was like it was $165 diagnostic, and then it was so much for this injector flush, then so much for this injector flush, and then we did this, and we cleaned that, and we did this, and they didn't even come to a diagnosis. They never ever sat down and said, "This is what it is." And so he gives me that, and I say, "You didn't squawk about this? $920?
Well, I got a battery out of it."
Well, they charged him $80 to replace the battery. And then they charged him on top of replacing the battery. They charged a fair amount for the battery, because I did check that.
Yeah.
So I'm just real confused. But what's going on right now, as you well know, is in the old days, we had about a 30 or 40% markup on parts.
Yeah.
As we get bigger and we buy more, we get into a deeper discount.
Right.
The top end stays the same. We just buy cheaper.
Yeah.
We're seeing now three times cost, and I'm seeing that on a regular basis. Now, you and I are old.
Yeah, we
and
are.
We're from you took a part for a dollar, you paid a dollar, and you sold it for a buck and a quarter.
Yeah.
So today we're three times. So if it's a dollar, now it's $3.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before.
Well, the cost of doing business has definitely got higher. Cost of employees, business, all that. But I don't think it's. I don't think the margins add up.
1 minute.
Well, I know that when we crossed over from 30 or 40% gross profit to where we did a 50% gross profit, so that thing was a dollar and we sold it for $1.50.
Yeah.
We had a 50% gross profit. I remember that and feeling really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But if I bought something for $100 and sell it for $300, I'm going to feel real uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just, and then it gets worse than that the higher it goes.
The one thing about it, the parts that we do sell aren't just the same part as they buy in the store. They're a part that comes attached with a warranty, a nationwide warranty, and a MasterTech tied to them.
Right.
So that part, they're getting something for their parts.
And that's why all of us that play the game the way it's supposed to, we all put the part number down on our invoices. So if you break down in Wichita, Kansas, he can look that part number up and get it. He can call us and we can cover the part. We can do stuff like that.
Right. And most of us are part of some system that will tell them what shop to go to, and they'll cover it through our system.
And that's the way it should be. But anyway, there's probably been at least 14 or 15 shops in a couple of chains that have recently sold. And they are, what are they called? What are those guys called? They buy the shop, they raise the prices, and they make a lot of money, and investors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of that going on right now. We actually have been in contact with two of them ourselves. We're adamant that we're going to keep it a family business.
Us
and
too.
And we're not interested.
Yeah, us too.
But I'd still like to see what the numbers are and see how they came about those numbers. And so they're talking about a variety of different measurements and stuff like that. Plus, all the guys that have sold are sworn to secrecy, and that's okay with me too.
Yeah.
The problem is that these guys are investors. They want a return on their investment. So they buy the shop. Maybe it's well run already, but they turn around and buy the shop. Then all of a sudden the parts go to three times cost. The customer is going to see that. And the labor rates are going through the roof. They're virtually all at 175 and north of that now. And so I don't know. It's going to be it's not going to be tough for us, but it's going to be tough for the consumer to decide where to go.
Yeah, and us, when we started our shops, we were technicians that had a passion for the industry.
Yes.
It's a totally different outlook for somebody that's got an investor that wants to make money.
What was your labor rate in the late 70s?
I think it was $35 an hour.
Mine was 35 to 40.
Yeah.
Because Renee looked it up the other day.
Yeah.
She says, look at the tickets.
I'm full off the top of my head. But yeah.
$35 or $40.
Yeah.
And our technicians were making $8 and $10 an hour.
Yeah.
Because
minimum wage then was $3 an hour.
Right. So, and the technicians in these new facilities are in north of $100 an hour. $100 an hour. But if they're at 175, then they become more than 50-50 partners
and they're
in the labor.
Flat rate, yeah.
Yeah, a flat rate. So it's really, everything's moving around. The only thing that's not being really affected is the dealerships. But as always, the dealerships set the limit, the sky limit.
Yeah.
So for the top. Anyway, 602-508-0960. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the shape of the industry. I'm Mark Salem, Kurt from Kurt's Automotive, and his right-hand man, Eric. We'll be right back. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you real quick about another shop in town that's a pretty good shop, and pretty good, but dargone good. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted facility, I think. Family-owned and operated since 1982. I've known Chuck since 1979, and Chuck and Chuck's family owns the place. So if you're in Sun City and you ask Mark Salem, who should I go to? My answer is always going to be Automotive Dynamics, and they're right there at 88th Avenue and Grand, just, or 99th Avenue and Grand, the north side of Grand on the west side of the road. All righty, let's go to the phones because we got callers. Jim, you're first. How can we help you this morning?
Hi, Mark. I just want to let you know I sure enjoy your show. I've learned a lot. I'm calling you from a suburb of St. Louis, and used to listen to you years ago on KMOX.
Well, thank you for that. KMOX is one of the largest stations in the United States, AM station. It we could get calls from New York all the way to California.
Wow.
And when I did that back then 100 years ago, it was the most fun I've had in a long time because the rules were kind of loose. And they didn't get mad at me for some of my harebrained ideas. But real quick, KMOX one time, a guy calls me and he goes, I'm in a cab. And I said, okay, what can I do for you? He says, I've got this maintenance light, and I can't get the maintenance light out. I said, okay, just pull over to the side of the road. And he goes, I got a fare. And I said, just tell him you're going to pull off the side of the road for a minute. You want me to fix it or not? Okay. So he's talking to the fare. He pulls off the side of the road. I said, turn your key off, turn your key on. Remember, push the throttle pedal three times to the floor. Don't start the motor, and then it'll go off. And then he uses a bunch of bad words. Oh, damn, you did it. You did it. And he's yelling and screaming. And so I'm fixing this car in Washington, D.C.
He's on the beltway.
And I said to him, send me the fare. I'll pay for the person's fare. And they go, no, they're laughing too. So KMOX was a great place. I had a lot of fun. But anyway, Jim, thank you for letting me rehash my fun there at KMOX.
Well, we sure miss you here. Well, anyway, my question, they're probably easy questions for you and your guests, but I've got a couple, I guess, old Park Avenues. One's an 05, one's an 02, and I don't want to get rid of them because I like that 3800 engine. But anyway, I need to put a couple wheel bearing hub assemblies on one of them, and I've been looking at Rock Auto Parts, and I can see those hub assembly prices are all over the place, And I know you talk about the spark plugs all come from, you know, like a couple manufacturers as well as oil and oil filters. Which ones do I go to? Do I go to, you know, like the middle of the road or the least expensive? Or,
okay,
you know,
okay. We have a disagreement right now. I'm just telling you right now because we're all looking at one another. But, Eric, you're first.
I've bought from Rock Auto just because sometimes that's the only place you can find something.
Okay.
If he wants to buy from Rock Auto, buy AC Delco.
Okay.
Because they will sell AC Delco.
Okay.
So he can buy a GM part from Rock Auto. So that would be the line that I know of would be okay there.
Okay.
That's the only line.
And I'm going to agree with him with a caveat. The caveat is Rock Auto is a trailer in southern Utah with two guys in it.
Yes.
Okay. They have access to every parts store in the Phoenix area, in the St. Louis area. They have every access.
Yep.
Not only do they have every access, but they have a computer system that when you pull up a part, it'll give you five different part numbers and five different brands and five different prices. You can get that on the web.
Yeah.
So you go to Rock Auto, you punch it in. Now, the other day, we had a rack. We couldn't find the rack. So we crossed it over at Rock Auto, and we found one 10 miles away in a different box, in a different brand, in the same rack. Yeah. So Rock Auto gives you all those part numbers that you can query all of them. So, and he kicked butt on the price. I mean, we really were happy with the price that we got it for. Rock Auto is just that. It's a place, and I make fun of them, but it's a place in Utah, and they have access to every parts store within a 10-mile radius of where you live. And they're going to look up that part in that way, and you can order it. Then they're going to have that parts store deliver the part to you or use an Uber or whatever. And that part then goes to your place, and you pay for it.
The only thing is that there is variations in quality.
Yes.
So I would not buy the cheapest one because there are Chinese brands that are being white boxed and sent out. So I would buy a name brand if I could.
And I agree to that with a caveat. You got anything else?
No.
Okay. China makes just everything.
Yeah. Even the AC Delco probably.
I mean to tell you, China makes everything. China makes everything. There's a friend of mine, Wayne. who goes there. And I'll tell you the story real quick. He has a motor mount for an Ultima. He says, how much to make this? The guy goes, $8.50. He goes, what is it going to cost you? And he goes, $8.25. He goes, you're going to make $25? He says, yeah, but your order's got to be $5,000. Yeah. He said it was going to be more than that. He goes, I'll make them. So he gets the mounts. They're made perfect to their specification. They're made perfect from China, and they're put in 20 different boxes with 20 different brands. Yeah. He says, just about everything we get comes from China.
Yeah.
Everything. He says, they do it to our specifications, plus we test. There's only two or three companies that make spark plugs in the world. There's only one company that makes a thermostat. Thermostat. Because they have the sophisticated equipment to test the thermostat. That's it. So when you look at all these moving parts, you got, okay, I agree with you. I wouldn't buy the bottom third.
Right.
I wouldn't buy the bottom third. I'd stick in the middle or on the top end.
Because their quality is going to be, their quality demands are going to be less in order to have a price effective.
And the warranty is likely to be better. And it's a name brand that you'll recognize.
Yeah.
So, Jim, that's the end of the thing. That's what we advise you. Tom, good morning to you, Tom. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning. Thank you. What are these little green modules you plug into the check engine module that's supposed to save you a bunch of gas? Do you know anything about that?
Well, there's all kinds of those out there. They're telling you that underneath the dash is your ALDL connector where we attach our scanners and our information data gathering. It's really hard to change parameters with those.
Yeah. Is this where you're supposed to plug that thing?
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay.
I don't know how.
I was curious about.
Yeah, because see, that's an output. Really, we're just gathering data. We're looking at data that's going on when the car's running, and so I don't know how we plug in there. But there are some scanners, like the DOD scanner, that you can plug into there, and you can change parameters.
Yeah.
Are you talking about something that could cost $400 to $600?
No, something that costs $400 to $30.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that, and I'm not familiar with anything that would allow us to trim your fuel numbers. Oh, I'll bet what it is. I bet it's a reset on fuel trim numbers, so it brings you down to zero, so your initial fuel economy per tank and per mile and stuff changes, and it shows an improvement right off the bat. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
That's a pure guess.
Yeah.
Unless you hook it up somehow to your phone and you're supposed to drive by the, you remember the old vacuum gauges?
Yes.
The economy. So it might like send some type of signal if it pairs with your phone. And so it makes you drive better.
Oh, it could.
Yeah.
It could. It could easily do that.
No,
the other thing.
It's just a plug-in module.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Why don't you, would you be kind enough to send it to me? Mark@marksalem.com. Mark@marksalem.com. Salem spelled like the cigarette, Mark with a K. And folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Kurt from Kurt's Automotive is here next to me, and his sidekick and number one tech, number one best buddy, number one shop foreman, and the guy who gets in the most trouble is Eric. He's sitting right next to me, too. So we have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix has been around since 1968. He actually worked on Barney Rubble's stone car, filled it. And if you don't believe me, ask him. But he's been around transmissions from the very first automatic all the way to the electronic 8-speeds. So if you need somebody to work on your transmission or you got a problem and nobody else can fix it, I can tell you, Automatic Transmission Exchange can, and they're located at 40th Street in Washington. Bob, good morning. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark. So you were talking about the 5.3. You know, my son has a GMC 2014 with the 5.3 with 140,000 miles. He's the original owner, and he thought he was having some kind of transmission problem because it was sort of shifting weird. But with those, you don't always know because it goes from 4-cylinder to 8-cylinder, So
yes.
Sometimes it sort of shifts weird. So he took it to Automatic Transmission Exchange, and they checked it all out, and they said it was fine because he'd done his fluid and filter changes every 40,000 miles and stuff. So he said maybe you got an engine, some kind of drivability. So he took it to a general automotive shop that we go to. And they wanted to, do the wallet flush thing. So thanks to you, he said, no thanks. And they charged him a $40 diagnostic fee. And then they said he needs a new transmission. And they quoted him $4,400 for a new transmission. And he said, no thanks to that, too.
Okay, well, stop. We got to back up a little bit here. When you're driving this down the road, DOD is displacement on demand. The computer's going to automatically make it a four-cylinder, a six-cylinder, or an eight-cylinder. Well, it won't make a six-cylinder, an eight-cylinder, but it'll change the. So it's capable of doing that. And the transmission is also going to have some issues with respect to throttle up, throttle down, speed, load, and all that stuff. The easiest way to diagnose this to see if it's a transmission is drag your foot on the brake pedal enough to cancel overdrive and stuff, and drive it with your foot on the brake pedal, but not enough to apply the brakes. And those of us that are skilled in that, that's part of what we're going to do to diagnose your transmission. But DOD, that 5.3, and if you have that, then displacement on command, you can also do that with the brake pedal as well.
Yes.
You can use the brake pedal to keep it. So this is where you pay a senior guy with gray nose hairs to go drive your car to determine whether it's an engine-related misfire feeling or if it's a transmission-related misfire feeling. Did I cover it?
Yep, that's how.
Does he have a check engine light on?
Yeah, does he have it, Bob, a check engine?
There was no check engine light, but when they read the codes at automatic transmission exchange, it had a bank, like a left bank misfire, and then he cleared the codes, and then when he took it to the general automotive shop, they said there was no codes. They couldn't see any codes.
Yeah, it's not a transmission.
It's a problem. He's probably dealing with fuel delivery issues.
And that's the one that we had last week.
Yeah.
It had the same thing. He said that the left side was leaner than the right side. And in reality, it was a DOD issue.
Yeah.
It was just a DOD issue.
And there's no way he's going to have a failed transmission and no codes.
Right. I agree with you 100%. And if you want, Bob, you can just have him take the pan off of it. And if half the transmission is in the pan, then, yeah, it needs a transmission. Yeah. And that's what we usually find is half the transmission in there. But I think you just need to pick somebody else that's ask them, can you work on a DOD General Motors? Have you diagnosed those? But to be honest with you, this is on a 1 to 10 scale. This is certainly a 6, a 7, and maybe an 8 on the diagnosis side.
Yes.
But it's not something that's impossible. It's just you have to get somebody with a little gray hair that's done it before. And so, unfortunately, and just because it has codes doesn't mean anything to us, does it?
No.
It supports our contention that this is a transmission problem because you have transmission codes. But we don't go in there and fix things based on codes.
No.
Because the computer's so stupid, it just looks at something and goes, well, that's a misfire. Oh, it's a misfire. Is the misfire caused by an injector or the spark or the boot or the coil? Oh, I don't know. We just still got to go find it.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Bob. That's the best we can offer you. Tim, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, guys, you guys got a great show. I really do appreciate it, and a lot of other guys that I know listen to you, too, so we do appreciate it. I have a 2011 SL550.
1 minute.
And I just started getting a issue when I go from drive. I'm driving, and I'm ready to park it. I hit the brake, and I try to put it into park, and it doesn't go. It's kind of like frozen. And if I jiggle it a little bit, sometimes it goes into park, or I got to turn the key off or just hit the button off, and then it will let me go right into park.
I can fix that for you by just giving you a name. Go to Goody's Automotive in Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Goody's Automotive in Scottsdale is a little gray-haired guy that knows more about Mercedes, and he has fixed cars for us over the damn phone. Now, he's not going to do that for anybody else.
No.
Because we can give him serial stream data.
Right.
We can give him stuff like that. But you belong at Goody's. No questions about it.
No.
And I'll tell you what, Goody's going to look at you, you're going to smile, and he's going to go drive it, and he's going to come back and tell you what's the matter with it. That's what he's going to tell you.
Yeah.
So you belong there.
Is it okay to drive?
Well, I don't know what it is, so I can't tell you, but I can tell you this much. When they start going to death on you, usually they're slipping like crazy. The fluid's burnt, although I doubt if you can even check
the
fluid.
Well, I think he's saying it physically won't go to park. Like, the shifter won't go move to park, right?
It's only the shifter. I have no problems with gears or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's safe to
so
drive.
So he's got to, he's safe to drive. And if it won't go in, you just hit your parking brake.
Yeah, and put it neutral or something like that if you can't get it into park.
Yeah.
But no, if it's a linkage problem or if it's some kind of a switch that's not opening the gate.
It's going to be a switch problem.
Yeah.
I've dealt with things similar.
And I think you're right. Yeah. I think it's a matter of it has to see zero speed. It's not going to let you go to park till it sees zero speed.
Right.
And if we've got 8 miles an hour hanging out there in Neverland, then it ain't going to go into park.
No.
But Goody's got a magic wand, and I don't know how much he's going to charge you to wave it, but I'm just telling you. And just tell him, don't forget Salem's commission, okay?
Got it. All righty. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck. I know he's listening. Goody, give me a call. Tell me how I can be a hero on this deal. Tell me what's the matter with it, Goody. Give me a call. Call me on my cell phone. I had turned off my cell phone, but I'm going to put it right here so
you
he
can
calls,
watch it.
I can see it.
Yeah.
And so it'll make us look like we're really smart. All righty. We're going to take a break. And Norm, you stay there. We have four lines open. If you want one, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we were going to go to Norm, but he dropped off, and certainly people have stuff to do. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. So I'm trying to sell my wife's car. It's a Ford Edge. It's a four-door, and it has fancy tires and wheels, 22s or something like that. But I have a list here on the car, and now listen to this. There's 41 repair orders, okay? There's 20 oil changes. 6 cabin filters, 3 new batteries, 5 sets of wiper blades, 4 sets of tires, replace purge solenoid once, rear brakes and rotors twice in 144,000 miles.
Rear?
Yeah, because we're up and down the pacing all the time. Yeah. So yeah. She just puts on a lot of miles without touching the brakes. Everybody that rides with her knows she doesn't touch the brakes. So at a 90,000, we put spark plugs. We replaced the front engine and tranny mount. But anyway, we have $9,145.87 of work on this car. Cost. No labor, just parts. Yeah. It's cost. So if anybody wants to buy this car, this is a nice car. And it's well kept up. It's got 148,000 miles on it. So it's $9,900, which is less than everything on the net says it should be. So $9,900. And I'm going to write that down so that I know that I said $9,900. But it's really a good car. And I think you'll agree, the beginning of the end of the engine and all that kind of stuff is oil consumption and blue smoke and fouling spark plugs. This car has none of that. No oil leaks, no pressure, no nothing.
Usually that's another 50 to 100,000 miles out.
And at least that.
Yeah.
At least that. So I went through all the work orders from mile 62 to mile 144,286. And then I reconciled everything that we had done, all the tires and all of this. Spark plug. We did spark plugs at the very first time at 90,000 miles, and then we replaced the two mounts. So she said it drove better.
Yeah.
So, and of course, happy wife, happy life. You know what I'm saying? It's really good. So it's a 2014 Ford Edge, and if you send me an email at mark@marksalem.com, I'll send you some pictures of it, and I'll send you a copy of everything, except I'm not going to give you the dollars amounts because those are a cost. And so I won't share that with you, but I'll tell you from a pragmatic point of view, we spent $9,100, $9,145 on it, servicing and maintaining it for the last however many years. 602-508-0960. There's a whole lot of Googling going on, a whole lot of I went to the Internet and this is what they say. That's a very difficult thing for me to handle because I want to say, so let me get this straight. You want to tell me what someone told you on the Internet and how to fix your car. So when I do that and it doesn't work, how are we going to unwind that?
Yeah.
How are we going to unwind it? One guy said, well, it's just no problem. It's just that you don't do anything. I said, I know, but I'm doing it based on your analysis, and you're directing me to do this to fix your car because some guy on Google said to. That's a very difficult thing. So we've just determined that when they start talking about dictating the repair, we have a stamp where it says, I accept full responsibility for the outcome of this repair that I am dictating them to do. So we'll do what you want us to do, but there's no backing up. There's no saying, well, that didn't fix it, because Google just is wrong. And I don't know if you spend much time on Google and that kind of stuff, and unfortunately I do because people challenge me on that. They don't ask questions like, what's the engine vacuum?
Yeah.
They don't ask questions like, what's the CO or HC out of the tailpipe? All the stuff that we need to determine what's going on underneath the hood, they don't ever ask that. Oh, you got a code for a mass airflow sensor? It needs a mass airflow sensor. Never mind that the boot's torn between the mass airflow sensor and the motor.
Yeah.
The $20 boot, I might add.
Yeah.
And so we're going to do a mass airflow sensor, but guess what? The code's coming back. So those are the kinds of things. Are you struggling with that?
A little, but not a lot.
We weed those out early because we don't give anybody, we won't repair off of somebody else's diagnostics. We at least tell them we're going to do a second free opinion. We ain't going to do a repair without doing a check. So we might give away a little bit of time here and there, but we don't. We can knock out the questions. We stop dealing with a lot of that.
Under those circumstances, what percentage of the time do you chase your tail, and what percentage of the time do you disagree with the original so-called diagnosis?
I would honestly say there's enough people doing enough things that tried a little bit. So I would say it's probably like a 30-40% of the time they're right.
Okay. They're close. Can I use that aesthetic right? Can I say close?
Yeah.
Because we have a vacuum leak, and we have really high HC and low CO. They don't know that, but we know that.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at this, and we're seeing symptoms that indicate a bad vacuum leak. And so we're halfway there. And so they wanted us to replace the mass airflow sensor because that's the code it's set or something like that. But we recognize that that has nothing to do with what we're doing. It is a lean condition, but the mass airflow sensor is reporting correctly.
Right.
So it's really a matter of to make it simple for the folks. We plug in a device that costs how much money? We plug in.
Well, just the updates annually are $2,000 or $3,000.
Okay.
And then the machine can be anywhere from $4,000 to $8,000.
Okay, and these are handheld scanners that allow us to get data. The scanner doesn't tell us what to fix it.
Yeah. No.
It tells us what the numbers are. It tells us what we're seeing. So you plug in the scanner and you go drive it.
Yep.
And you're looking for parameters. And so if it's an exhaust is plugged, we're going to see that in a variety of different places.
Right.
And so that's the important part. But just because it has a code, what percentage of the time does the code actually dictate the repair? Let's just go with oxygen sensors. It's got an oxygen sensor code. How many times is it really the oxygen sensor? Approximately.
Well, depends. We got like 42 oxygen sensor codes now.
Okay.
A lot of times if it's a heater circuit or a signal circuit code, I would say 90% of the time it's the sensor. But if it's anything outside of a circuit code, lean, rich, slow response, things like that, they're almost never the sensor.
Okay. And a lot of times the generic scanners that they use at the auto parts stores don't give us all those different parameters and stopping points on the O2 sensor.
Yeah, because there can be there's the code, there's the 4-digit code, and then there's the 2-digit subcode.
Okay.
So we get the subcodes with the tools.
Right.
And so then it tells exactly what part of that code they didn't like.
Now, recognizing this is a stupid question for you, but you're going to answer it anyway, or I'm going to turn off your microphone. What percentage of the lean codes are actually O2 sensors versus something else?
I would say the lean, two out of 100 are actually a sensor problem on a lean code.
It's because it's telling us the truth.
Yeah.
I got a lean code. The EGR stuck open. I got a vacuum leak. I got a PCV valve problem. I got a brake booster problem. I got da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm seeing it, but I don't know where it's at.
Right.
So never mind you say to the customer, is there anything else? And they go, no. And say, well, let me ask you this. How's the brake pedal, the power brakes? Well, sometimes the pedal's hard. I think we're halfway there.
Yeah.
and how does it run? Well, when I come up to a stop, it runs pretty bad. Was your foot on the brake? Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So as
they don't hear that big hissing sound, it's like, how do you miss that?
But the point is those are what's important.
Right.
And when we drive the car, we're gray enough haired to know what to look for. So sometimes you don't even leave the parking lot. You get in and you push the brake and you hear the hissing and you go, okay, we're done. We're done. That's the diagnostic. Now you're going to go in there and make sure that the booster is the problem and not the supply and not the vent and not the check valve.
You're going to shut that system down somehow and then make sure everything else can still adequately do what they're supposed to without that in the system. So then you know that's the only problem.
And I bring that up because I don't want people to think that, oh, once we see the code, we know what it is. There is a process. Well, your kid comes running into the house, and he's got blood running off the top of his head. We can all assume that he probably got hit with a baseball in the head. But it could be blood from somebody else.
He headbutted somebody in the nose.
Exactly. He headbutted somebody. There's all these different moving parts. Oh. So you got to kind of clean it up and see if it's there. Oh, the blood's not there. Okay, now where'd the blood come from?
Or just steal it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or who hit you with, you know, a tomato or whatever.
Yeah.
But those are the process to diagnose the problem is really 50% elimination and then interfacing. And for instance, on the O2 sensor, you create a lean condition, and you better see a lean number, a number. So the lean number is 0.1, 0.2, 0.3. So you better see that. If you create a rich condition, you better see in ways you and I can talk about it, an 8 or a 9.
Yeah.
And so we know if the oxygen sensor can see a lean and see a rich, it ain't bad.
No.
So something else is wrong. So even though it's an oxygen sensor code, we are not going to replace that oxygen
sensor. What about the ones that one is right and one is wrong, yet the right one is throwing the code because of it believed the wrong one?
That on the older model cars...
It still happens.
To some extent, but it's better than it was.
Yeah.
I think you'll agree. It was better than one. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Okay, who we got, Gil?
Say hello to Keith.
Keith, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. I'm homebound and handicapped, but my wife has a 2003 Toyota Corolla that you can't get the trunk open. Now, when she bought the car used, it didn't have the master key that she's been using for months and months, a couple copies of keys that she had made. It got stiffer and stiffer the last few days, and then now it won't work at all, so she can't get into her own trunk. I thought maybe the fold-down seats would work, but reading the manual, it says they don't work unless you do it from the inside. You can't release the fold-down seats from the inside the car. You have to do it from inside
okay.
the trunk.
All right. What
so
do you think, Eric?
I think she just needs to call a locksmith out.
Yeah.
Just get a new lock cut out or new keys cut out.
Yeah, sometimes we just have to stick a drill bit in the old lock and destroy it to get the trunk open. And I mean, you can still... I know you said that you have to get access to the seat from the trunk, but there are a lot of times that that's not always the truth. And once we pull the bottom out and we get the top out, then oftentimes we have access with a long screwdriver to unlock the trunk. So in spite of the fact that you've read somewhere that you can't get that back seat out, that's one of the first places I'd look to get the back seat out and get the lock out. At that point, you can take the lock out, go get a new lock cylinder and a couple of keys, put it in, and we're done.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do. What part of town do you live in?
First Avenue in Peoria.
Okay. Well, Harker's Automotive is up there at 38th Avenue and Indian School. And and Action and Kurtz are both on the I-17 corridor at Bell and Deer Valley. So those guys, all three of those guys could help you.
You think that would be better than just call our mobile locksmith out to it?
No, you could certainly do that. You can certainly do that. I think as far as price is concerned, they're all going to be pretty close to the same.
Yeah.
It just really depends. See, for us, if we can get through that back seat, we're just going to order a new lock cylinder and a set of keys for you, and we're going to be done with it. The lock guy might have to drill out the old lock. He's destroyed it. So he's going to have to go get the same lock we got and put it back in. So, you know, but if you call around and just say, give me a worst-case scenario estimate, that's really what you need to do. Okay?
Very good. Thanks so much for your help.
Oh, you betcha. Trunk, lock, 10. 7. That's Police Talk for out of service. Anyway, 602-508-0960.
1 minute.
And we got 1 minute to go. So if you call in now, you're going to have to wait for 3, 4, 5 minutes until the top of the hour. But that number is, again, 602-508-0960. Harker's Automotive, we talked about that. 38th Avenue and Indian School, been around for a very long time. I think, actually, Fred Flintstone was one of their very first customers at Larry Harker's Auto. He's been around, like I said, a long time. Auto electrical work, brake emissions and stuff. But I'm going to tell you, I can't tell you how many times I've sent someone to Larry Harker's and the customer had diagnosis that was G. And when they got there, they found out that G wasn't really the correct diagnosis. L was. And they fixed the car. So like many of the shops that I refer you to, they're just better than the average bears. So if you're anywhere near that 38th Avenue and Indian School, from an oil change to every time I turn on my wipers, the passenger window drops down. They got that under control. Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. I'm Mark Salem, and we'll be back in just a few minutes talking about car and car repair stuff, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark Salem here with Kurt and with Eric from Kurt's Automotive up at I-17 in Bell. We've all been friends long before this young buck next to me was even born, right? Wasn't that what it was?
I don't know. Close.
Close, yeah.
It's close. You guys have known each other for before I was working, that's for sure.
Well, you are his Alan, and yeah. I have an Alan.
Yeah.
And you are my Eric, or Alan is the yeah. same. So each one of us has a right-hand guy yeah. that kind of takes yeah. care of everything for us. So it makes a big difference. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about some other shops in town that are really good shops. Blackwell Automotive. Oh, Tom Blackwell. If you want to meet a guy that has hit his head so many times on the hood of a car, if you want to see a guy whose brains are just scrambled and every once in a while hits a home run, then go to Blackwell Automotive and ask to talk to Tom. He's at 40th Street in Greenway. His shop divided into halves. He's got the conventional mom and pop. So it's just everyday cars and trucks. But on the other side, he's doing vintage work.
I drove by the other day. There's a bunch of older stuff.
I mean to tell you, we're talking about $40,000 engine swaps to direct fuel injection with stuff like that. So a 55 Chevy with a high-performance fuel-injected, sequential port fuel-injected, maybe even turbo or supercharged motor in it. So he says, I'm really loving that because the transition of the 55 Chevy or whatever happened to be the Cord, mm-hmm. the Ford, the Chevy, whatever, into that monster. He says that it really is something. He was also telling me, he says, when you do inventory on a monthly basis, he says, you know, what do you count? And I said, well, we count all the stuff that we have in inventory. So then he calls back a little while later and he goes, do you do washers? And I go, are you kidding me? He goes, no, do you inventory washers and nuts and bolts and stuff like that? And I says, no, those are called just general.
Yeah. You know,
that's kind of an expense that yeah. we just blend yeah. Over everybody's bill. That's part of your environmental charges and shop supplies.
Yeah.
I said, why? And he goes, well, he says, you know, I've been counting washers. You've been counting washers?
He did hit his head, huh?
He did.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm telling you. So anyway, Blackwell's at 40th Street in Glendale. Tell him that you don't want to pay for any hardware. No bolts, no nuts, no washers, no nothing like that. And tell him, just Mark Salem said, to bill Mark for it.
Yeah.
And that would be just fine. Anyway, we've had quite a few discussions about this Toyota where he talked that he had the back seat problem and getting in and out of the car. And it was a 03 Corolla. I've been thinking about that. What's the purpose of us gaining access to the trunk?
Flat tire.
Okay, good, good.
And groceries.
Or, yeah.
Groceries, fine, right? But is it if the seat bolts from the inside, why would that be that way? Because if you need access to the trunk to get the latch open for the trunk, you need to get in there. So we took the word of somebody who said that it's bolted from, you have to get it from inside the trunk. We did what I always complain about, where you jump to a conclusion.
Yeah, because all of the seats unbolt from the inside of the car.
And they do. And I've been bugging me for the last hour, is I don't remember any. But the whole reason, how many times have we taken the back seat out with a long screwdriver, reached through there, and popped the trunk latch and then replaced yeah. the latch? How many times have we done that? I've never had a car where you had to take a torch and cut the seat out. The whole reason of getting into the trunk is through the back seat is because the rest of the car is locked.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to break into your car to get into your trunk.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. So I think the message that I wanted to say out loud is I did what I don't want people to do. I want to take at face value something I've told and then redirect myself around that hypothetical. So somebody read on there that an 03 Corolla, you can't do that. You have to go through the trunk. We go through the back seat for the gas cap, for oftentimes the cable to replace the gas mm-hmm. cap. Oh, we're in the trunk a lot, especially if we have to access the fuel tank and we can do it through the trunk. Mm-hmm. So I just don't understand. But I'm wrong when I assume that I'm hearing the truth from somebody that says on a 03 Corolla you have to go through the trunk to get into to get the back seat out. I'm with you. I'd bet good money that I could get into that trunk area and take that back seat out.
Yeah,
yeah. I've never seen one you couldn't.
Yeah. So we did what I always blame everybody, is you listen to a bunch of old gray-haired guys, and they say this, and it's the God's word, but really we violated Mark's rule. And I did it. I'm not blaming
he
you.
He was probably talking about the quick release to fold the seat down so it was easy to get to, so without actually physically having to remove everything.
Well, yeah, it could very well be. It could very well be.
That was probably the easy way to actually get to quick releases through the trunk.
Yeah. Yeah, that. See, he even brings up another point. Oh, but it took you long enough to come up with that.
No, I thought about it. You're just arguing with yourself now, so I figured I'd throw something else in there.
No, that's right. I am. I'm arguing with myself. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Once again, I want to tell you, my wife is selling her 2014 Ford Edge. It's a four-door. It's a beautiful car. It's got 22-inch wheels and tires on it. It's gunmetal gray. It's got 148,000 miles on it. Now, people are scared of that, but I say to this, of all the engines that we replace, almost every one of them has been damaged by the nut behind the wheel.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Overheat, running low on oil, no maintenance, really bad stuff.
Yeah.
This car's had 22, what did I say earlier? There was a total of 20 oil changes and 144,000 miles, so figure it out. Mm-hmm. And we've done all the maintenance on it and all that kind of stuff. I think you'll agree with me, or do you agree with me, that 99% of the motors we replace have been run low on oil or abused.
Yes.
Yes.
No question. No question about it. It's the nut behind the wheel that caused that motor to fail. It wasn't anything else.
Yeah.
And I say that with a smile.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not calling people nuts or anything.
Yeah, you are.
But most of the time, now, what are the two major reasons that we do replace motors?
Overheat and low on oil.
Run it out of oil and then cook it.
Yeah, and cook it. And that's it. And it's... when the car gets towed in and it goes into the shop, usually everyone can smell, and no one has to open the hood. Nobody has to do anything to know that that thing has been cooked.
Yeah, that's like, ooh, look what this one did this time.
Can you look at this? There isn't any spark plug wires on it. He melted all the spark plug wires off of it. And inevitably, it's the husband blames the wife, and the wife blames the husband, or you know, or the kid, or somebody's involved like that.
Well, the red light come on, and it was only 10 miles till they got
home. Oh, gosh, how many times have we heard that? Red means stop.
Yeah.
Okay. Try that on a policeman. Well, the red light came on, but I had a shot at it. Red means stop. Yellow is caution, and green means go. And when was the last green light you saw?
Coming down here, I saw one.
Do you remember? Do you remember the green light?
Well, the only green light I see ever...
like 58 Buick or something.
It, Oldsmobile.
Oldsmobile.
I think it was the Oldsmobiles that had the green light on. Yeah.
Well, then you don't drive any modern Dodges.
Oh, do you have a green light?
There's green lights all over.
Well,
your headlights
signals.
And your... No, your headlights, your fog lights, your turn signal. Yeah, there's green lights everywhere.
Oh, that's right.
Those are activity-based. We're talking about diagnostic stuff.
Well, you didn't say diagnostic. You were just talking about lights on the dash.
Oh, no, you're right. I was. All right. All right, I'm shutting his mic off.
He's always been like that, Mark.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. I'm a big boy. I can live with that. But you're right. I got green. I got lots of green in my dashboard, in my Dodge. I certainly do. What kind of fuel economy are you getting on yours? What's the dashboard?
Oh, well, dashboard's saying like 13.5.
Okay. How about yours?
I run around town 15.5 on the road. I'll bump. Empty, I'll bump 20, 21.
Okay, and I feel pretty good. I thought until I had talked to you and some other people, because I'm asking a lot of other people, I'm at 16 or 17 in a one-ton Dodge.
Then you're doing really good.
But it's 93 miles from Payson to Tempe or Chandler and back and forth. So I'm setting the cruise control. If the speed limit, what is 65? So I'm at 66 or
more like 90.
Or was that 86?
No, you go with the flow of traffic.
95.
You just go with the flow. No, you go with the flow of traffic. You can't lead the traffic because you go 95 and there's going to be a train behind you. Everybody's going, knows what's going on. Yeah. But the answer is I'm pretty proud of a one-ton Dodge Dually diesel with 140 or 150,000 miles on it. Same thing, is running 16, 17 miles to gallon.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Renee will improve. She'll do the reset on it. And Renee will improve it by 1 mile to the gallon, but the difference is just the RPM. She's just not traveling at the speed that I'm. And it could be a difference of 3 or 4 miles an hour. Okay, we got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say good morning to Leonard.
Leonard, good morning. How can we help you?
Okay, Mark. I'm looking at an ad here for Verse Oil Services, and I see one Super Saver Oil Change, $16.95. $10 off semi-synthetic, full synthetic or diesel oil change. There's no other asterisk anywhere to describe this thing. So here's how it break down after I got done with the oil change. Okay.
Okay. I'm ready.
Parts $20.94. That's for a filter and 5 quarts of oil.
Okay.
Labor $3.99. Waste disposal. Shop supplies $0.67. Sales tax turned up to $23.30.
For a semi-synthetic oil change.
When I see this ad, I say to myself, it's going to give me an oil change for $16.95. Doesn't say anything extra. There's going to be anything extra. So I feel like I got ripped off.
Is that my shop before I answer that question?
I thought it would be $16.95.
Mark, you would never say I'm
Went up to be $23.30. Oh,
okay. What's your regular oil change for a 5-quart system? Regular?
$75.
Okay, $75. That's conventional.
We don't semi-blend. We don't do conventional anymore.
Okay, so semi-blend is $75.
Yeah.
What's your synthetic five quart?
I think 105, like that.
I think 105 is kind of an average. Yeah. So those are what we're seeing as well. We're still pouring lots of conventional. I don't know. We're just pouring lots of conventional. That's what people had. That's what they've been using. They're happy with it. On the newer model cars, we're really insisting that we not do that.
Whatever they call for.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for that. Whatever they call for. But, yeah, there are three different kinds of oil changes, and it has to do with a 4 or 5 or 6 quart system. What's the diesel now?
What's our basic?
What's the diesel?
Around $1.50,
I think. That's what it is.
And then you go to you're over 200 for the synthetics, like in my 19 Dodge and
right,
stuff.
Right, right. Yeah, the issue on the oil is that you really need to go with what the manual calls for. So if it's a 0.20 or a 5.20 or whatever, if it's a synthetic, you are better served with that kind of oil. That's going to give you the best fuel economy, the best protection. You can go to a conventional oil, but you got to back up to 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change intervals because that's all it's good for.
Plus, a lot of conventionals are not the weights that they call for, the 0.20s, and we have seen a lot of issues because the tolerances are so tight in these newer cars. If they don't use the right weight oils, we have failures.
And see, what he's talking about real quick is you take your hands and put them in front of you as if you're praying to your wife for forgiveness. Okay? Then you rub your hands together fast like this. That's the motor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we need to get in there and provide lubrication, carry away the trash, and carry away the heat. Are we better off with peanut butter or water?
Mm-hmm.
The consistency.
Yeah.
That's it. And the newer model cars don't like peanut butter.
No, they have real tight tolerances, and they we've seen failures in camshafts, overhead cams, and all kinds of stuff because they used the $16.95 oil change when they needed the $75 or $100 oil change.
I agree with you 100%. We see all kinds of camshaft, but Chevrolet's got their own problems with some camshaft stuff. So let's set that aside.
I think what this gentleman was complaining about was the ad for $16.95, and when he got out the door, he was $23. They didn't say anything about the shop supplies and stuff.
And That is something, I can take both sides of that argument.
Yeah.
Number one, when you go into Safeway, it gives you the price but not the tax.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You got tax at the end of the day. Everybody expects that. The shop supplies and environmental charges has become something that you used to just pay for those, but now it's a profit center.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there that are charging a big ticket, a lot of money for shop supplies and environmental charges, and I say to myself, that's not my percentage.
No.
That's not my percentage at all.
But by the same token, years ago, I didn't used to break it out, and somehow I got in a conversation with the state, and they said, well, you know, when a customer comes in and you lube their door, who pays for that squirt of WD-40? You didn't sell them the can. And so that's why we put the shop supplies, and then that's a taxable item, and that's how that gets covered.
Absolutely. I agree with everything you said. Yes. The shop supplies is really those things that it pays for rags. It pays for us to clean your windshield. It pays for us to use a little lubricant on your door hinges and all that other kind of stuff. It's just the stuff that we can't possibly attribute to your bill. It's just it's usually a less than 1% of parts.
Yes.
Yes.
It's something like that. So even if it was 1% of parts, that's a valid thing as opposed to that.
Yeah.
Anyway, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Of 11 o'clock. And you know what? We're going to go straight to the phones because we got people waiting, so we're going to go to Fred first. Fred, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. So I got a solution for the guy that's calling to get inside the trunk.
Okay.
My daughter had a Corolla, like a 2003, locked her keys in the car. Somebody told me there was a plug, a rubber plug on the left side of the driver's seat, right by the little lever, where you could pull the plug out, take a screwdriver, and push that lever up, and the trunk would open. And it worked. There is.
I'll be darned.
Yeah,
we've.
Yeah, I got one on you, buddy. I've been listening to you for 20 years.
No. Oh. Okay, Fred. So, Gil, if you have caller ID, would you please copy that number down so that next week I can offer people a phone number for free automotive help 24/7, and we'll give Fred's number out. No, you got me. No, you got me. You got me. That's and I'm sitting here going, how did none of us have that? And I'm looking at you two guys, and you seem to be on the trick.
Yeah. No, but, no.
Oh. Uh-huh. Oh, boy. All righty. Anyway, okay, Fred. All right. And that's not true. We just need to make sure everybody understands that there's no plug there. Okay? We need to make sure. But he did get me. Matt, you're up next. Matt, how can I help you?
Okay. Who'd you go to?
Matt.
Go ahead now.
Matt.
Hello?
Hey, go ahead, Matt.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Cool.
Hey. So same kind of response to that 2003 Corolla guy.
Okay.
I've been through a bunch of these things. Maybe all it takes for this guy to get his thing going is to spray a little WD in that block.
You know, that's something
through the keyhole.
That's something that we didn't really ask him why his key didn't work or why his key didn't unlock the trunk.
Well, he did describe that it got stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. Yeah. And there's also an interior trunk release. So, you know, there's a couple of ways to look at it.
Oh, that's a good point.
The woman hasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
the interior trunk release.
He's right.
A lot of them do have them.
Yeah. You just grab a grandkid and just shove them in there.
Yeah.
But then you have your seat problem. Then you got to still get into through the seats.
No, you're right. You're right. No, that's.
Yeah. I found that that lock gets. It gets a little gummy after a while, and WD will, you know, something from the outside might get it going for him.
And so just for everybody, if you get WD-40 and you shake it up like you're supposed to, it's got the red straw. You just use the key to open the gate just a little bit, and you stick that red nozzle in there, and you go like this. Psst, that's about all we need. And at that point, then put the key back in and work it, and it could very well release and work fine.
Yeah.
That's something that
it
we
very well.
And I'm going to give you credit for that, Matt, because none of us thought about WD-40 and the lock. And if we did, we didn't admit it. And we're not going to admit it now because it's too late, because you just made us look really bad and put down Matt's name as somebody we're not going to talk to anymore. But anyway, thank you, Matt. Thank you very much for that.
You've been great help in the past, and I appreciate your time.
All right, thank you.
Great show. Thanks.
Thank you. Harry. Is this Harry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, Harry.
Hey. Got a disclaimer. First is my shop, so I've been going to them for a number of years. So I know the boys there. They're very good.
Well, how much did they pay you to say that?
That's none of your business.
Well,
hey, it's one of those deals. I get a free oil change. And his wife comes out with a bunch of pastries and whatever. So.
Oh. Yeah, no, that's no problem. No, when
that's
I hear,
not bribery, Mark. It's just good business.
Oh, it's advertising.
Advertising and promotion.
Okay. All right.
Let's start my own YouTube channel.
I want to tell you something. When they say Harry's on the phone, I say, is it Harry? And he goes, yeah, it's Harry. And it's okay. Yeah. It's okay. But he has been a customer of yours for a very long time.
Yes, he has. A good one, too.
Well, ever since my Duramax days.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And so describe, Duramax. I'm going to give both of you a chance quickly to describe the good customer. As opposed to, let's go on a 1 to 10 scale. The good customer is certainly going to be a 7, 8, 9, or 10. So what's he different than the one at the bottom?
The good customer is the one, when he walks in the door, you smile and say good morning. The bad customer is the one, when he walks in the door, he can't find anybody on the front counter.
And that's experience. That's experience right there. Well, there's no cutting that. You sometimes, and with computers, we all have notes.
Yeah.
And admittedly, and I'm going to talk for both of us, and if I'm not, then raise your hand and yell BS, okay?
most of the comments, I would say 95% of the comments on our computer is something really nice about this customer. Mrs. Jones' husband died in 1988.
Yeah.
Treat her nice. Look at her customer number. She is 1,100 out of 38,000. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that most all the customer comments that we give staff, and that they're allowed to make as well, no one's allowed to put the bad stuff in except Mark. And I'm real happy to do that.
There might be some kind of code or something that would go next to a name.
No, the customer can't see the screen.
I know.
But basically it just says, take the estimate times 5 and call them.
Yeah.
and they're going to tell everybody I'm really expensive, but they're going to find out that my estimate was exactly the right repair. So I can live with it. They're going to say I'm expensive. But, you know, sometimes you got to flush a customer. Sometimes. And they do it to us with shops.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
So, all right. Well, Harry, I'll make sure that your next – wait a minute. You still got that Duramax?
No. Hey, I got a Ford now. 150.
Well, I was going to participate in your repairs, but I'm not now because you got a Ford.
Yeah.
Well, you got one too.
A recommendation from your son, Alan.
Oh, I know. I don't know where he came
Alan's
from.
Alan's not there to defend himself, so. You know.
No, you're right about that. He creates lots of problems. Do you know what he did to me the other day?
Who knows?
The old Excursions. With the 7.3. So he bought one out from underneath me.
Yeah.
One of our customers. And then he made it this rock.
I was sitting there when you guys were making that transaction, whatever that was, a few weeks ago.
Yeah. And so I went out and found my own. And it's in the shop right now. And the motor's out. And the frame rails are painted. And the engine compartment looks brand new. And he left cloth in his. I'm having leather put in. So mine's a little bit better than his. And I told the guys, mine better beat his. So dad and son have identical 2001, 2000. I think one of them's a 1 and one of them's a 2 Excursion with the 7.3. But, you know, those are monster motors. They are just monster motors. This will be the second Ford my personal family's ever owned. Renee had that Ford Edge, and she just got a Ford Explorer, which is against my better judgment. But then again, I'm only get to make some of those decisions.
Is
half
that
the time.
That 3.5?
Did she get the 3.5? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
get rid of it before 120.
It doesn't really do any good for me to talk to her because she sleeps with the car guy. You know what I mean? And she really doesn't care what he has to say.
Water pump goes out on that thing. You're in trouble.
I understand.
Hey, Mark, I think Harry's trying to ask a question.
Oh, Harry, go ahead.
Remember Harry, the caller?
Okay. Yeah, Harry, go ahead.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, sir.
I was kind of wondering. I get on the internet and look at YouTube a lot. They got a lot of.
And Harry, I'll tell you what. We're going to put you on hold, and we're going to catch you on the other side of this break. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. I got 34 seconds to kill here.
No, you've got that backwards. You got 21 now.
Okay. So anyway, 602-508-0960. We have 4 lines open, and in a very short period of time, perhaps seconds, we're going to have 5 lines open. So if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. Got Kurt, I got Eric, and got Mark. You got 3 brains that have thousands of years of experience and a little bit of mud. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I'm going to tell you right now we're going straight to the phone, and we're going to start with Norm, because Norm was early, and then he had to drop off. But Norm, I'm going to take you first. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi, Mark. I called, 2 months ago, I guess. I'm the guy with the Toyota Corolla with 100,000 miles on it, and you gave me a recommendation for a shop located in the West Valley.
Okay.
Now, what I was doing at that time, I wrote that down on a piece of paper on my knee. I was in the parking lot at Costco, and I've long lost that piece of paper. So if you could give me that recommendation one more time.
Probably Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School is where I sent you.
Okay, Harker's Avenue. Now what I'm doing is I'm driving and trying to do this.
Well, no, pull over, because if you have a crash and then all of a sudden Jacobian Myers and the lawyers are going
to
be calling.
Just tell me on the website and find it.
Oh, yeah, you could go to Mark Salem.
I blame you guys for this?
Harker's, you remember
Mark.
This. Yeah. Remember this, it's Harker's Automotive. Harker, H-A-R-K-E-R-S, Larry Harker's Automotive. And if you call and you ask.
Harker with with an H-A-R.
Yeah, yeah. And then if you call and a lady answers, her name is Ellen. Don't make her mad. She's the wife of Bob, who owns the place.
Never make a woman mad.
Well, you don't want to make Ellen mad, because I've seen her wrist, or, you know, do wrist, what do they call that?
Arm wrestling
guys and beat them.
Oh, God.
So, oh yeah, she beat you. Don't say I'll arm wrestle you for my bill, because she'll beat you. So anyway, yeah, Harker's.
I remember they used to have contests on Wide World Sports or Petaluma, California. They had arm wrestling contests. I don't remember that, any of that, but. Harker, okay.
Yep, Harker.
And the address again? I've stopped.
38th Avenue and Indian School. 38th okay. Avenue and Indian School. All righty, Norm. Good luck to you. And tell him Mark Salem says that he's going to send you a coupon for 50% off, but you haven't got it yet. Just tell him that, okay?
I don't want to upset this lady.
No. She'll laugh and smile and say he's been drinking again or something like that. So... Anyway,
38th and what? My car stopped now. 38th and what?
And Indian School, 38th Avenue and Indian School.
Indian School, okay.
All right, thank you, thank you. All right.
Thanks so much, appreciate it.
You bet. Bill, you're up next, Bill. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark, good show. Appreciate it. I was looking in the market for a used Corvette, and I come across one, a 2004. And long story short, they said the thing is tuned to burn E85. So... where is that? Where do you get it?
I don't know. My Subaru guy would know, but I don't. That's what they run in their Subarus.
Okay. All right. So, but let me take a different tilt on that. Have you ever tuned a car for any kind of fuel other than the old cars with distributors, where we can advance the timing so we can run premium and get a little bit more power out of them? Is there any other reason to tune something for E85?
Yeah, they go extreme timing. Because they can take, they're not as hot as gasoline.
Okay.
So they get
of the ethanol.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So they can do extreme tuning on them with an E85.
But if you're going to use regular gasoline and you're not going to use E85.
You just don't get as much power.
You just don't get as, and it's going to be measurable, but not jaw dropping.
Depends how it was tuned. Some are jaw dropping.
Okay. So
well, according to what they said, they had LS3 heads on an LS2 supercharger, and it was 720 horsepower.
How was your twin turbo vet, Mark? How many horse did it rate?
You know, I
2 minutes.
There is no way to comment on that kind of a statement.
Yeah.
Because the question is on one hand, we got an LS6, LS7 motor here. On the other hand, we've got ethanol. And we're going to advance the timing, and we're going to bring some heat to it. But I can advance the timing and bring some heat to it with gasoline.
Yeah.
And why do you do that? You know what I'm saying?
It's they can actually advance it so much. The Subaru guys just love it that they can. We go run 40 degrees timing. They'll run 60.
Okay.
And they can just throw that fuel in. So they're just getting.
They're also wrapping how many. They're wrapping 8,000, 9,000.
Yeah,
right.
And they're turboed and everything else. And so,
no, okay. So, all right, I got you. So, it's not going to drag the starter with base timing at 30.
Well, it's all electronic, so they pull it back down to start it up, and then they run them way advanced.
Oh, so, this is a programmable program or programmable atmosphere we're talking about. Okay. I don't know anything about that, like you.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of people saying stuff about this big LS7 motor with 7,000 horsepower and all this other kind of stuff without some kind of documentation.
Did they tell him that he'll probably only get 6 miles a gallon?
No, they probably did.
On E85, you'll probably get 6 miles a gallon.
Yeah, because your BTUs is way down on E85.
And when he gets into Ganado, Arizona, and he needs a full tank of gas, he ain't going to find E85, and he's going to have to stick with diesel or regular,
because that's all they got.
Now, and they'll run regular, and my Subaru guys, they run regular, but when they go to racing and they want to do long meets and stuff, they fill up on E85.
With all due respect to the guys in the Subarus, why would you race a Subaru?
All-wheel drive.
Oh, I understand that, but I mean, you're likely to get stomped by a diesel VW Rabbit. Mark, I'll take you out of these cars, okay. Man. They're wild.
Okay, all right. But I mean, you know, Subaru is just not that kind of car that the dad's going to say to the son, "Hey, when you turn 16, I'm going to give you a Subaru." You know what I'm saying? It's just not a
no. I don't understand.
But these are cars that are drifting through corners and all-wheel drive. Yeah, and so they're really road racing.
Yeah.
Little monsters. They're little bitty skateboards with a big motor.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see that. But an E85, why would you get something? That's like buying something with an ignition system that only appears in 1% of all the cars in the world.
Oh, Tesla?
No, yeah.
I fed you that one, didn't I? You were waiting for that one.
No, but that's my point. My point is, why do we...
I looked on Gas Buddy. Nobody sells the 85.
I will... Mark, get his number. Somehow get it to us. I will contact my Subaru guy.
How about we just do this? Go to the website, marksalem.com, and send me an email. And I'll make it easy for you. It's mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And I'll put you in touch with Eric. And we'll go that way.
Yeah.
What we want to avoid is none of us want to be covered up with car questions for the rest of our lives. And so I'm kind of the filter on the front side of that. But I will put you in touch with Eric. And I just want to do it in front of everybody.
The 85 was enough to make me to think about not doing it.
Well, you know, it's somebody built something for their own. They're trying to fill 6 glasses as much as they can. It may not be those glasses you want filled.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But I'm not one to talk. I have a twin turbo Corvette. I have a supercharged Camaro. Neither one of them have E85, and neither one of them are slow. And neither is my Dodge truck. Yeah. And so I mean, all of us have just different glasses to fill up. Yeah, right. But the E85, I think we struggle because we'll work on a car and not know it has E85, and now we've got parameters and tailpipe emissions that we've never seen before, and we don't understand. Yeah. So it's a one percenter is what I call it. It's a one percenter car. So, you know, that's it. But anyway, Bill, you know, go to my email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark is with the K. Salem is like the cigarette. And I will put you and Eric in touch, and you can help him out finding it.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got open line 602-508-0960. We got 5 lines, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open, so if you'd like to call and you have a car question, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We do the show off the show.
Yeah.
So we're sitting here talking, the gist of what we're talking about is the Subarus with the E85, which is a different kind of fuel. So it's different than regular and super. So the burn time of each one of these fuels is different. So regular, let's just pretend for the radio, is a balloon pop. That's the power, a balloon pop. Now we take the same balloon and we just hold the... and we let it go, and it goes, it's a longer burn on super.
Yeah.
And E85 is even longer than that.
Yeah.
So one molecule on regular, one molecule ignites 100, and 100 ignite 1,000,000. So the burn is short. But on E85, in an exaggerated way, one ignites 2, 2 ignites 4, 4 ignites 6, 6 ignites 8. So the burn is slow. It's like a forest fire that just consumes everything as it goes along. And that's the difference in the fuels that we're talking. As you enhance the octane ability, and octane is the resistance to knocking, and so I'm not going to throw that out there, okay? We're just going to leave that alone. As you enhance that, then you have to do chiming change to take advantage of that. Yeah. Because if in this circle of information that we fire the spark here, it could be, so what? The motor says, so what? Half of it's going out the tailpipe because you fired it way too late. So you can fire it earlier because the burn's going to push on that piston for a long time.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of things that we think of that are difficult to digest. But by the same token, those guys with the Subaru, when you start go out and look at them, have fun. They're running those all-wheel drive sideways through corners that no Corvette's going to ever handle.
No.
We're not going to be able to pull the front wheels. I mean, when we go through the corner sideways, it's going to go the way the Corvette wants to go, not the way the steering wheel's going.
No.
And it's not an all-wheel drive where the Subarus are all-wheel drive. So we have a couple of extra, you know, benefits there to keep the butt behind the steering wheel as opposed to the butt on the left side or the right side. So anyway, the fun we've had when we talk about cars of today
I'm going to kind of close with vehicle emissions. We all know that the vehicle emissions have everything to do with your ability to get good fuel economy and for the motor to last forever, right? Yeah. And all we're doing on vehicle emissions is shutting off the crap that's coming out the tailpipe that shouldn't be coming out of the tailpipe.
Right.
So if I said to you, for every gallon of gas that you buy, a third of it, it's going out your tailpipe, everybody in the world would raise their hand and say, fix that.
Yeah.
Today's cars, if you put a gallon of gas through the engine, how much is coming out of the tailpipe?
I think 70%, isn't it?
You know, it depends on whether it's pre-cat or post-cat.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's kind of the what you're before the catalytic converter. And the catalytic converter is like a big furnace.
Yeah.
Okay? So before the catalytic converter, 70%.
Yeah.
After the catalytic converter at the tailpipe, it's single points. The catalytic converter is like a big forge. It's like a big, huge fireplace. And as the fuel comes through the catalytic converter, we catch on fire any lasting fuel molecules. So we burn up whatever didn't get burned by the engine. Now, most people, when they're on the floor on their car, they're going to be kind of flooding the catalytic converter with raw fuel because the motor won't consume it all. The rotten egg smell goes hand in hand with that.
Yeah.
So you get sulfur.
Yeah.
And so on times, people will say, well, my wife is complaining that she had a sulfur smell. How do you explain to the husband that her foot's on the floor? How do you say, well, she's driving like A.J. Yeah. Foyt then, because there's no other reason for your cat to stink unless you're overloading it with fuel.
Right. Yeah.
So, and on the other hand, if I were king of the world, every new car would have a raw egg taped to the throttle pedal, and we would double our national fuel economy. Either that or you'd have a whole lot of scrambled eggs on the floor of your car.
Yeah, a dirty carpet. Yeah.
Exactly. But if you were to drive as if you had a raw egg taped to your throttle, you would get tremendous fuel economy. Tremendous, right?
You
know,
you don't even do that.
This is funny coming from you and the conversation we just had during the break about...
I don't know what you're talking about. And we'll just shut him off. Here, hold on just a minute. Which microphone is he in?
That one, that one. Yeah.
Okay, well, he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone.
And I understand his point. There's some things that are best said between the boys that don't go anywhere else.
You know, it's something I've told my kids sometimes. Mm-hmm. Says, Mom doesn't need to know everything.
Oh. Okay, now you have been in microphone hell for the last 30 seconds. So you forget that thought that's on your lips right now.
I don't know what thought you were talking about, Mark.
I think most all of us, I think I'll speak for myself. I love car repair because I like making them run like a sewing machine. I like fixing them when nobody else could. I like the idea that you can add a little bit of power for a little bit of money. I like all of that. But I am very wary, and everybody that knows me knows that I am constantly looking at the tailpipe emissions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not going to give you, I'm not going to build you a car that's going to go out and pollute the air to the tune of 10 other cars.
Right.
We're just not doing that. But we're going to, it's kind of like you're on the floor. You're going to Payson, and I've got the fuel valve in my hand. So I'm going to open it up, and we're going to go faster, faster, faster. Then there's going to get a point where we don't go no faster, mm-hmm. and I give it another little open, and we don't go no faster. So then what do you do at that point? Can you have the nozzle in your hand? I'll tell you what I do. I'm going to go close it a little bit and a little bit more for a lean drop,
yeah.
and then we're locking down. And that's what you want.
Yeah.
You want to consume 100% of the fuel being delivered to the motor, and you don't want nothing coming out of the tailpipe.
Right.
And we can do that today.
Well, you said I was in control. I was to turn up the air knob and just give it more air.
Oh, you could do that.
Bigger turbo.
No, you could do that. You could take a diesel and just take the air filter off and build a big scoop on the front of it and just ram some air in there. But you got turbo. You got a turbo on a diesel, so you're already packing the cylinder full of air.
You can put two turbos.
Tighten that wastegate a little bit more.
Oh, we could.
Yeah.
Yes, we could. There's all that stuff that can happen.
We ain't turning fuel down.
But, well, we're going to maximize the effect of the fuel delivery.
Okay. Yes.
But, yes, there are lots of programmers that you can. It's a matter of going into the computer under certain circumstances, and when the computer says to squirt 0.7 into the cylinder, I want you to interpret that as a 0.8, and that's how control modules work.
Yes.
So we can go in and we just change the parameter slightly. This whatever this number is, it's +1 or whatever.
Yeah.
And when you get to this number, which is the MS number, then it's plus 100%, and that's Mark Salem. Plus 100%.
I'm teasing.
Yeah. I'm proud to say that we have some cars that, have been altered, but all of them are capable of passing the emissions test that they're at right now. And so, and the emissions test today, they don't even do your tailpipe. They look in your computer to see if you got codes. And they look in your computer to see if you just reset it yesterday.
Yeah.
And, well, they're actually, you know, there's those little monitors that they had to run. Well, for a while, some of the programmers were just zeroing those out, and so they would always show ready.
Right.
Now there's a double check on those to see if those have been modified. So the ones that have been zeroed when they should actually have something there, they're kicking those out now.
Okay, now, we're not teaching them to cheat here, but what we're saying is you can't disconnect the negative part of your battery.
No.
Because you got some hot rod underneath the hood and think you're going to go to emissions the next day. They're going to catch you. The monitors haven't been reset.
Yeah.
All that preliminary information's not there.
Yeah.
And they're going to know that and they're going to kick you out.
Yep. Yeah.
So you drive it for 30 days as if you got a hot cup of coffee between your legs. Okay? You're not going to accelerate hard. You're not going to accelerate. You're not going to be stupid. You're not going to do. You're just going to drive it like grandma's sitting next to you. And then after that, they check engine lights off. You can go through emissions.
Yep.
So you're going to get in trouble if you try to get past emissions, and they're not going to have you stomp the throttle to the floor.
No.
So those are the kinds of things that and I'm not teaching anybody how to get through emissions. You can have a hot rod and still pass emissions.
Yes, you can.
But you just can't do it one day. You can't clear the codes and then go in the next day.
No.
All cars fail. Even Grandma Moses' cars fail.
Yeah.
So anyway, other than the fact that we talked about oil, and I think would it be a good guess that the 020 synthetic is probably your most popular synthetic oil, or the
or the 520
or the 520?
Yeah.
Okay, 020 or 520.
Yeah.
And pretty much we're going to put in what the car asks for.
Right.
And there's a sticker underneath the hood that almost always guides us for that. Synthetic oil, just for the rest of you, synthetic oil has a range far superior to what we were grown up in the 50s and the 60s. In the old days, the car, long before 300 degrees, the car was a piece of molten metal. So today we have synthetic oil that can handle 500 degrees, and now we have engine temperatures that are considerably more than we had in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s. But we're doing a good job doing that.
Yeah.
So we're not hurting the motor. We're doing a good job, but we have to have an oil that will continue to flow, and oil does a couple of things. Number one, it goes and provides lubrication, and it carries the trash and the heat away.
Right.
So that's the three things that oil is supposed to do. Carry your trash, carry your heat, and provide lubrication. It's a little easier for a synthetic to provide lubrication when your engine temperature's in the 230 to 240 range when you're out there running and gunning, because that oil is capable of that, where a lot of oils are going to turn to a tar under those conditions at 250, 260, 270. But instead, synthetic turns to a tar at 500. And frankly, your motor's trash at 350 anyway.
If you hit 300, you're in trouble anyway.
You're done.
But your oil's still good.
And your oil's still good. And how many times have we seen that where somebody brings a car in and there is nothing but molasses and engine parts in the oil pan?
Last month, a $40,000 Cummins.
Okay. And you can look at it no matter what they say. Oh, I changed my oil every 3,000 miles.
No, you don't. Said 30,000.
Oh, he did. Okay, he admitted it. Yeah. Okay, good. So, but most of the time we can see for ourselves. You take the oil pan off, and inside you see nothing but peanut butter, black peanut butter, and you see a whole bunch of metal and ground up metal that you know came from right above it. So this motor's trash. The question is how did it get there? You don't have to ask.
Yeah.
This is a maintenance issue. Yeah. That's all there is to it. It's a maintenance issue.
Yes, sir.
And so, well, can you get it covered under warranty? No. They're not going to buy this one. This is going to be an easy one. Anyway, my email address, if you have a question, no, that's my cell phone. Never mind that. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Give me your phone number if you want me to call you, because oftentimes I'd rather do that than and write forever. And and if I call you, I'm calling from a blocked line. And so if you get a blocked line, you can just pick up the phone and say hello, and I'll say right away, this is Mark Salem. Do you want to talk about your car question? And you'll know it's me. Otherwise, you can hang up on them like I do everybody else. Anyway, thanks, Kurt.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Mark.
I-17 and Bell Road. And does your wife still have stuff, nice stuff for new customers?
That we do some stuff. It's a little different than in the past, but we're still doing stuff.
Okay, that's when I first met you, is your wife would take pastries and stuff to new customers and say thank you.
Yeah.
And that's something that we did in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, and I was always impressed to the fact that you did that. And I know that you're still mad at me because every once in a while I say, Kurtz will still work on your weed eaters and
your
lawnmowers.
Well, we've developed a pay schedule for that. Weed eaters and lawnmowers are $500 an hour now.
Oh, so you've been able to handle my problem with no problem.
No problem.
There you go. Good enough. But if you have a weed eater, then Kurt's a little expensive, but he can make it run if you don't need to. And he'll even load it for string for that kind of money. Anyway, I'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.